Hello, welcome to Show Me Your Mic, a podcast about podcasting, which you can find online at goodstuff.fm/SMYM, or on Twitter at SMYM_FM. I'm your host, Chris Enns, and for this episode, I've got Ray Ortega. He is a professional podcast producer. A lot of us claim to be professional podcast producers, but he actually is paid to produce podcasts in a professional environment, so I think his title works. He hosts the Podcaster Studio, a podcast about podcasting as well. Great idea. And the Podcaster's Roundtable, where he brings together podcasters to discuss the philosophies of podcasting on video. So enjoy the conversation with Ray. We went a little bit longer this episode, and hope you can stick around and enjoy it. It's the last episode of 2015. Thanks for listening. Enjoy our conversation. Well, welcome to Show Me Your Mic, Ray. Well, this has been a long time in coming. So,
thanks, Chris. I'm stoked to be here. It's exactly. It's about time.
We've had differing schedules. I don't know what it is. I think it's. I joked somewhere else. Maybe it was on the previous edition of the show. Just our time zones. Maybe our kids' life. You have a child, right, or a few children? I don't remember what your child.
Yeah, I have
status.
one daughter status. You do it live, so that makes it tough, right? Because it's kind of have to be here at a certain time. Mm-hmm. And contrary to popular belief, I have a day job.
Right.
I think a lot of people think that I make my money from my podcast, which is not exactly accurate. It's not at all. So I punch a clock just like the rest of you
guys. Not like me. I don't punch a clock.
But you're lucky.
Yeah. Well, yeah, depending on. You can ask my wife whether we're really all that lucky or not. But
there you go.
there's presents under the tree this year. We'll say that. That's the bonus.
That's good. Yeah, the podcast is still going, and there's presents under the tree.
Yeah,
something's
exactly.
Going right.
So, are you? This is one of those things where sometimes people who do things online, they have their jobby job, their day job, but they don't really share too much about the day job. Are you at liberty to say what you do? Because you do seem to do some sort of video podcasty thing for a day job, but it's
yeah.
Not-
I do, you know, it's that thing where like these days it seems like with social media and everything, it's like, it just seems oftentimes better if you don't, if you don't connect yourself too much with your job. I do talk about it. So if you listen to my show, it's definitely in there. Several interviews, it's definitely in there. So I'm not hiding anything. I just generally I generally tell people I am a professional podcast producer. I basically co-produce a network of science shows for a large nonprofit that is based in Washington, D.C. And it's called the American Society for Microbiology. And we have a network of shows at microbeworld.org. So believe it or not, we do podcasts. Podcasters would believe this because it's niche, right? But we have one show that's literally, it's just about viruses. It is called This Week in Virology. So our host is a big fan of the Twit Network, and that kind of got him started. And so most of his shows are named in that naming convention. And Leo's cool with it because he has actually been on the Twit Network a bunch of times as a co-host for some of their science shows, which they no longer do. So I produce a network of science shows. And like I said, that show about viruses, like 10,000 people a week listen to that show. So it really just shows you like, yeah, it just proves that in podcasting, niche is powerful, right? I mean, there are people wanting that specific content. So that's what I do. I, you know, 8 to 5, 40 hours a week. I work from home. They're based in DC, but I actually work from home. I was allowed to move back to California. I was living in DC. That's where I got that job. And I do everything it takes to produce a podcast. And podcasters know this because you're everything, right? You're the marketing department. You're the host. You're the engineer. You're the you're everything. The one man band. So there's two of us. We oversee about 6 shows. We also do a lot of live streaming. We do a lot of sort of like, you know, video pieces that actually do go into a podcast feed, but. We do video internally for the organization. So pretty much audio and video, but it's all mainly centered around our network of podcasts.
And it sounds a bit like that might be either like the dream job for a podcaster or the nightmare where like, you know, you dream about doing this for a living, but then when you're actually doing it for a living, it's like, oh, this is mundane or torturous, or like, I'm not trying to get you in trouble with your job, but like,
no,
idea of like, you know, we pine after, like, if you're a designer, you wish you could get a job with a design firm, and then all of a sudden you do, and you're like, oh, I hate doing this 24/7. I like it, you know, when it was just like evenings and weekends kind of thing, which is what you, I would assume your, like, RayOrtega.com and the podcast studio and stuff, which we'll touch on later, is more like evenings, weekends, fitted around your job kind of stuff. So what's the, tell me about the other side, the grass on the other side. Is it actually greener, Ray?
Right. Well, for me, it is. I mean, it is a dream job. So if you listen to the Podcaster Studio, my show about podcasting, or one of them, I say that I'm, you know, my day job is podcasting, and my nighttime hobby. Basically, my day job and my nighttime hobby. That's podcasting, because I literally like turn my chair from one computer to the next to start producing my own stuff right after I quote unquote clock out. But for me, it is a dream job, because back, you know, when I was podcasting, I got started at around the end of 06, early 07. And I was doing it as a hobby, because anyone back then just thought podcasting was amazing, and they did it. And, you know, these days, a little more debatable, right? People, some people come in, they think that it's different. Maybe there's money here. But back in the day, most of it was born out of passion. So I just absolutely loved podcasting. And through that hobby, essentially, I was going to like podcasting meetup groups, and I was going to give talks at like any kind of convention where they were talking about podcasting. I was just trying to put myself out there and share what I was learning along the way. And through that, I guess you could call it networking. It's not what I was doing. I was literally just having fun with my hobby. But naturally, you meet people if you're out there. And you find out, I found out after, actually, there was a PodCamp in DC. PodCamp is an unconference. It's a conference for podcasters that there's not many left. I think Philly or Pittsburgh still does one. Not too many left. But you can start your own PodCamp, by the way, in your own city. So check out PodCamp. I think it's podcamp.com, maybe .org. And through one of those, I found out that somebody was, this guy I was talking to, worked for this organization. I was literally standing there listening to a conversation, listening to him explain what he does, and that there was this job opening. And he was actually pitching it to somebody else. I interrupted three different times, and I said, that's my job. Like, that's my job. And I just made sure before I left that sort of informal conversation that I had a chance to get in touch and get an interview. So I got the interview, and I got hired on for 6 months initially as a contract position, and to see if it would work. And it worked. They hired me on full time in January 2009. I started in the summer of 2008. And I mean, boom, I am now doing what I'm already doing for a hobby. Now someone's paying me, and I will say very well, more than other careers I've had in the past. And, you know, I'd say it really quietly. Don't tell them, because I would do it for so much less. But because it is a dream job. So I get to produce for a living. Now, I really love production. Okay. So that is part of it. And now, if you're doing a podcast and what you love is being on the microphone, but you hate recording, you don't dive into the sort of weeds like I do in terms of post-production, all that stuff. If you don't enjoy that, I don't know if it's your dream job. But when I go to talks, I tell people all the time, if you do enjoy production, perhaps what is monetizable about your show is you. What I don't think a lot of people are realizing is that they're building up an enormous skill set that is probably really valuable, especially as more organizations come online and they say, oh, this podcasting thing seems like there's something there. We should probably be doing it. But where do we start? Who should do this? And I always tell podcasters, you're the go-to people, because you have the knowledge. And more importantly, you have the portfolio that shows what you can do. And that's what I was doing with my own show. I was building a portfolio. Now, remind you, none of that was conscious. So when I go and I give talks about podcasting, I often tell people about this sort of possibility that exists, hoping to reach that one person that was me in the audience. If someone had opened that door to me, I would have thought, oh my gosh, yeah, that's amazing. I would love to do that. So really long-winded answer to your question. For me, it's a dream job, right? And yeah. I hope that my job, professional podcast producer, I hope that in, you know, 5 years, that's a standard job title. So when you go to that Christmas party and someone says, what do you do? I always have to sit there and I have to take a couple seconds and think, I have to analyze the person and say, how do I explain this to this person, right? Will they get it? So hopefully in 5 years, someone will say, hey, I'm a professional podcast producer. And they're like, oh, okay. And they get it because they've heard a podcast or they listen to podcasts.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I know often when I talk with podcasters, they kind of get focused in on their show as the thing that they do. And the show is the fun thing. But like you said, they don't enjoy editing. They don't enjoy post-production. They don't enjoy learning about... I'm somewhere in between where I enjoy some of that stuff, but I can't spend all day doing it sometimes. But
sure.
But yeah, that I think there is certainly going to be opportunities for folks like us where a business wants to bring on either in a consultant role or a full-time role like you've landed, something to do with this, where they can't afford an audio engineer who's, you know, six figures or whatever they might be and has the, you know, recorded professional music and voiceover work or whatever, but they need someone.
I think it's really unique.
Yeah.
I think it's unique because we have a certain skill set that you can't necessarily go out and get. I always tell people they're putting themselves through sort of new media college, and they're not coming out with a degree, but they're coming out with a portfolio because you have proof of concept, like an artist. Here is my portfolio. Here's what I can do. And I don't think that you can go out and hire an audio engineer to run your podcast network or your podcast show for your organization, whatever it is, because they don't have all the other skill sets that are unique to producing digital content that then has to be, you know, put into an RSS feed or and then marketed, you know, via social media and maybe doing SEO stuff for iTunes specific, right? All the stuff that podcasters have likely taught themselves. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's necessarily like the skill set of someone who went to school to, you know, produce, you know, do audio engineering, mixing or something like that. Sure, they can put together a heck of a podcast, but unless they're podcasting, they don't have all the other skills. So in fact, it's funny because that person that hired me, but who's now a friend, Chris is my good friend. I think we did a brief show once for a while, but ironically, his name is Chris.
Nice.
Or coincidentally, I guess it's not irony. And when he was out looking for someone to help him produce his show, he was going to those people, you know, traditional people who were in media already and already doing production. And then he'd say, okay, so what's a podcast? And, you know, they got the blank stare, right? They could not answer. They had no clue what a podcast was, especially back in 2008.
Right.
So, you know, so eventually he realized, hey, I need to go out to people who are already doing this and see if there's someone in there that would have the enough knowledge on production. I taught myself all this stuff, right? But have enough knowledge, but then have that passion for podcasting and the medium and the and what was new about that and the unique nature of that. And so so I was hired because of less because of my skill, even though I had skills, less because of that and more of the fact that I just was in podcasting doing it and speaking the language.
Right. And so was that that predates like the Podcasters Studio and the Podcasters Roundtable stuff that you're doing now? Right?
It does.
And so what,
just a little bit.
Okay. What kind of stuff were you doing in podcasting prior? Like, did you have little shows that have since gone the way of the graveyard? I forget what the sort of podcast term for,
for totally,
things
yes.
dying, but.
Yes, pod fading.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
It's a typical podcasting term. But yeah, so back in, when I discovered podcasting for myself, it was back in, I think, 2005. When a little known service called Napster, you may have heard of it, it suddenly was not really a place that we could use legally anymore. So they were really coming down, right? You got a letter, everyone was scared. It was scary enough for me to stop using Napster. So I had gotten what I needed from Napster, which is just tons and tons of bad 80s music, essentially, is what I got. But yeah. But I had to go somewhere else and I opened up iTunes and it said podcast in the corner. And I said, what the heck is this? And I clicked on it and I heard these guys talking. It was terrible, but something about it was so amazing. I was like, wait, so these two dudes in their living room are producing an awful show, but I can hear it. And so I thought this could be amazing. So I went out and I looked for good content. I found that out there, things like geekbrief.tv, Callie over there, and what was it, Cranky Geeks. A lot of it was video that I found. And so I just started consuming all this content. And then, like most podcasters, once they discover it, you know, they're like, wow, I got to try this for myself, right? Mm-hmm. So I wanted to teach myself podcasting. How is this done? How do you take a show and put it online? And when you think about that, you have to think, well, what the heck am I going to podcast about? And for me, I really wanted to learn the tech more than I wanted to have a show. I just wanted to figure it out. And I, you know, was driving along thinking about this, and it just hit me. I was like, oh yeah, I work in the produce department. At the time, I worked in a grocery store through high school and college. And in the produce department, people come in and they ask me every day. They ask me questions all day long. How do I pick out an avocado? How do I know when a watermelon's ripe, right? All these crazy things that you need these little tips for. And because I don't like to tell people I don't know, or say, well, I can't help you, I'd go back and I'd read the book. We have this sort of Bible of like fruits and vegetables, and you know, it'd have a picture of the fruit and vegetable, and then have a description, and it would tell you usually how to choose it, right? How to pick it out. And so I would study this thing so I could answer everyone's questions. So I had all these tips that only the people who came through the door of my store could ask me, and I could tell them, hey, this is how you choose this thing. So I said, oh, boom, that's a podcast. It's a video podcast because it needs to be seen for most of the stuff that I'm going to teach. So I said, that's it. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do like a 5-minute show about how to pick perfect, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables. And so that became Produce Picker Podcast.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's so funny because it's debatable. I'm curious when you ask a podcaster, hey, when did you start podcasting? And so does it mean when was the first day your RSS feed was available to the public? Is that the first day you're a podcaster? Or is it the 6 months prior that you spent setting up your podcast, right? Before mm-hmm. you launched your feed. So for me, I spent about the summer of 06 till the end recording, setting up my website, setting up my video. And then I think I went live like first couple of days of January. And so I always say like, you know, I started podcasting 06, 07, you know, but people can look you up and they can see your feed. It's like, well, you're not a podcaster till 07. So, so
well,
anyways.
You can see, yeah, producepicker.com. I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, so, yeah. It's amazing that site still works because it's not maintained at all. But
that's awesome.
That's it. That was the show. That was so the purpose of that show for me was to teach myself how to podcast. And that's what that did. And once I learned how to podcast, it really, once you start podcasting, it becomes almost your full-time hobby, if not your full-time job, because you're always doing it. Whether it pays or not is a different question. But I eventually just racked up an amazing amount of knowledge because back in that day, you had to learn most of it yourself and you had to make all your trial and error and you had to make your mistakes and learn from them. And then, so at some point, my knowledge shifts from, you know, this produce knowledge to producing knowledge. You get that? Produce. Anyways, I switched over and I said, okay, now I want to share how to podcast because this is actually my passion, right? Because fruit and vegetables, yeah, I take pride in my job, but not quite my passion. But podcasting was my passion. So I was not discovered, but I got that job. I got my job that I still have producing podcasts partly because of what I was doing with that show. That was my sort of portfolio. But then right about 6 months later, I launched the Podcaster Studio, which was a show about how to podcasting. And that show really was, that was more for me. That was like, okay, this is what I want to talk about on a microphone.
Nice. Okay. So that's, yeah, I'm just digesting and thinking about fruit now, I guess. Fruits and vegetables.
Yes. It's, may or may not get hungry.
Yeah.
Might be able to be a little healthier after this episode. I don't know.
But that's interesting though. And also the fact that folks like us, like I don't think I go back quite to 2005, but definitely 6 or 7 years now with podcasting and the fact that some of that stuff is still online. I guess in a comparable world, bloggers have articles they wrote, you know, 10, 15 years ago when they first cut their teeth on publicly writing and produce or promoting their work. But there's something particularly, I don't know if it's embarrassing or whatever, but just hearing your voice, seeing your face on a video in your case, for example, or whatever, that it just kind of reveals, you can see how raw this medium was way back yeah. when, and gives perspective on, you know, obviously right now the big talk is Serial and stuff and just these heavily produced, well done podcasts. And it kind of has changed obviously, which is good and it's growing. But yeah, remembering sort of where some of us have come from is always, is kind of good. And reflecting a bit on that, is probably healthy to sort
of
remember.
I mean, they're early episodes of the Podcaster Studio. So this is a show where I teach you how to podcast and hopefully really well, right? How to produce a high quality show, typically an audio show, but I talk about video on that as well. And the early episodes, as you go back in the catalog, because what people often do is they'll discover you and a lot of people will actually go back through your catalog and I say, oh, well, it's only going to get uglier as you go backwards. Right. Now I could change that. I could rehash those episodes. I could re-record them. Some people do that. After later on, they're like, gosh, my early stuff is so bad that I want to go back on there, I'm back on the microphone and re-record it. And that's fine. But for my specific show, The Podcaster Studio, it's important for me to leave it up there because you can go back to episode one and hear it and see that even I, who I now consider myself a pretty good podcaster, it's not as good as it is now, right? And so some people, they really hesitate because it's not going to be perfect and you just got to get started. So I leave it up there like, hey, go back, go listen to the first 10 episodes. It does not sound very good, but the content's good and you can hear the progression over time. And that's really how it works with podcasting. I always tell people, grow as you go, but you need to start. So I leave it there as a proof that, hey, even the best podcasters had to start somewhere and it probably wasn't that pretty.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I think, what's great, because often we hear the bar is now, I don't think it really is this yet, but like, you know, the bar is cereal or whatever, right? And so that's fairly intimidating. But when you look at some of the rest of us, we're still fumbling along and figuring our way out and fumbling over our words and things like that. And so there was a big sort of dust up a couple of weeks ago about, you know, you need to have this mic or that mic and you need to use this mic technique and all that kind of stuff. And those are all good discussions to have. But yeah, the basic idea of now more than ever, it's so easy to start podcasting. So to try it out, get going in this thing, this medium that's so fun, at least if you enjoy it, yeah, like we do, and then watch like the Podcaster Studio and educate yourself and get better at it. But yeah, I hope to let people know, make sure people know that you don't need to be intimidated and there's no wrong answer on how to do your episode one. There may be a wrong answer on how to do episode 99 if you haven't made any improvements, I guess.
Right.
But even that, I mean, it's just your thing. So, yeah, little soapbox, I guess, I got up on there for a moment.
Yeah, I think it's tough because there is Serial, which is hyper-produced. Most podcasters are not going to do something like that, right? They are going to do something like we're doing, which is either solo on the microphone or with a co-host via Skype or interviews via Skype, what we're doing right now. So, you know, there are two different levels, I would say. There's Serial, which is just sits sort of in a class by itself, which is not the first podcast like it. It's just the recent buzz. Mm-hmm. But there are, you know, you're better off going out and seeing who's in the niche you want to be in. Listen to those shows, see what they're doing. And, you know, if you have to copy the format or, you know, imitate the format, whatever, in the beginning, you can do that and you'll develop your own style. You know, I think a lot of people are also worried that, well, I have to develop my own unique style and everything has to be totally new. Well, you know, none of this is new. We're all sort of recreating radio. But what I think is about neat about podcasting is that you have people who are coming into the space who don't have any training. And I'm curious to see what emerges from that, right? Because new things will come out of that. But just start, find something you like, listen to it, you know, and sort of aim for that quality. You definitely don't need to be Serial. Look at the Twit Network. It's really basic, but it's good quality.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And they've, and that again, touches back on the design and the website of things, which you touched, like, you know, the sort of jack of all trades aspect that we have to be as podcasters. We're knowing a little bit about video and audio, audio and then possibly video, but also web and marketing and SEO and all that kind of stuff and iTunes. And they're like, Twit's website is, you know, isn't the most amazing looking website in the world, but it's not what their purpose is. Their purpose is producing audio and video. And so, yeah, exactly. That's sort of pick your battles, I guess, especially when you have limited resources, as many of us do.
Yeah, I called them simple. So their video is anything but simple. And their studio, which I've been to, it's amazing. I call it the podcaster's pilgrimage out here in California. It's open door. You can totally walk in. There's nothing simple about that. But as a format, their audio shows, pretty simple. I mean, they're doing, you know, he started in his like his attic, right? His little studio, and on Skype, and a basic mixer and a basic microphone. And you don't even need that much.
Yeah. Yeah. I like your what's it called, Twitter header pick or whatever that you've got there with you and Leo.
Oh yeah. I recently changed that. That's me. Yeah, exactly. The Twitter header pick's got me and Leo at the big table, I guess it's called. And I have the fez on because he makes you put the fez on if you want. It doesn't make you, but yeah, very, very cool experience. If you are anywhere near, if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area visiting and you're a podcaster, you have to add that to your list because it's right at the gateway of wine country. So it's like 40 minutes out of San Francisco. If you're into beers, there's an awesome little microbrewery to go eat lunch at before you go. And it's a awesome trip. I had some friends over, Mike Russell from Music Radio Creative. He was over visiting from the UK. And I was like, you guys, you have to go to this. And so I met him and we went out there and it was an awesome time.
Is that the, is that north? This is not a geography podcast, but north of San Francisco? Like,
yeah, it's north. It's, right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
That's what I didn't even, I was there now a year and a half ago, I guess it was, but I didn't even think of, I for some reason in my head, it was farther away.
Yeah. From well, where it's we sort were. Of tucked away in this little city that in Petaluma, California, where most people wouldn't know where that is.
Yeah.
But basically if you're in San Francisco, and you have transportation, you rent a car, even for a matter of, you know, half a day, you basically just go over the Golden Gate Bridge. And on the other side is where all the rich people live. It's all these really nice, little nice communities. Actually, if you're in San Francisco, you're rich too, because it is ridiculous price to live in San Francisco. But yeah, it's just over the Golden Gate Bridge, about, you know, 30 minutes up the road. So really cool.
Nice. All right. Well, next time I go back, we'll do that.
Definitely.
Okay. So you touched a bit on Podcaster Studio, the show that sort of got you into doing this. It's like, because like you said, you're not making your money per se, you're living anyways off of podcasting consulting. Mm-hmm. It's a passion and an interest of yours. You do have...
Well, not consulting. I'm not making a living off consulting. I mean, I have a full, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
I have a salary job that just happens to be this really unique thing, which is a podcast producer. I do consulting on the side. So I mix all these things, right?
Yeah.
So I monetized my skills as a podcaster and got hired to produce someone else's network. But then I do have my own, I have my own shows that I do where I'm actually behind the microphone. I'm not the host at work. So people do ask that too. They're like, well, you host these? Like, nope, straight up production. And,
which that probably would help too, right? Cause if you were talking all day at your job, your day job, and then on the mic, and then to come home and try and do more shows, you know, even if he did have a personal interest, it might, that's probably where it would get quite a bit more draining to just, I don't know. Depends on the person, obviously, again, but
definitely
talking wears you out, even though you're just sitting.
Sure, sure.
But anyway, what I was referring to, I guess, is that you're, what often, or there can be anyways, there's a lot of folks doing this, and they're all, a lot of them are great folks doing this, but you know, you're there attempting to, or they are making their money purely from consulting, you know, affiliate gear links, all right, that kind of stuff, where that's not supporting your family directly. Maybe it's supporting some of the hobbies you get to do, or toys you buy for your kids or whatever. But, and so that's, I've really appreciated just the angle that that brings to your, the language you use and the way that it's used. Like, it's, there's genuine interest in helping the community. Your gear guide or whatever, that's another big thing now, is getting a gear guide out, but having your gear page is something I often refer back to, just for quick advice, especially, you know, pricing on a webcam or a mic or some audio gear. And just recently picked up the Logitech C920 webcam that you've recommended for many years. That's what, something you use, I know, with your podcaster roundtable.
Yeah, nice.
Cover in a bit, but what is that part of, sort of the crossover again of your day job and your podcasting hobby, is having access to some of this gear? Because that's where often I find consultants or podcast folks will, like, I could put up a gear guide of stuff, but I've only ever used some old generic mic, and then I jump to a Heil PR40, and then I have my iPhone. And so, like, I could say that you should use an Audio-Techno ATR2100, because I've heard Ray talk about it, so I'll put it on my thing. But I've never actually used it, where you seem to have, from shows I've watched, podcasts I've listened to of yours, you know, you actually have hands-on experience with a lot of this different gear. So is that work-related, or you just buy and return a lot of stuff?
Yeah, exactly. So it's, I would say it's an evolution. Like, in the beginning, when I first got that job, we needed a bunch of gear. We needed cameras and some mixers and a bunch of stuff. So I got to go shop for it. Oftentimes I get to put together these amazing packages, which is a lot of fun. Sometimes I get to use the gear. Sometimes I don't. But they're like, you know, go spend $5,000 to get this package. I'm like, great. And I buy stuff that that I normally probably wouldn't buy for myself because it may be pricier or some other reason, or it just serves a different function. So yes and no. In the beginning, I got to play with some nice cameras and some nicer microphones, but most of the stuff, the gear page you see on my website, is stuff I've either I do own or I have owned, but it's been a real evolution because I also have a YouTube channel that I do, and I teach people how to shoot really nice, high-quality video, and these days that means using DSLR for me personally. So I do a lot of how to shoot DSLR video. And through that, that channel has done so well in terms of views and subscribers that I have now have a relationship with one of my affiliates, which is B&H Photo here in the US. And I've gotten to the level where I can basically request anything I want and they'll send it to me for a month and then I send it back. Nice. And there is, you know, I don't even always have to do a review. They would appreciate if I did a review. Obviously, they're giving me the gear. I don't do reviews. So that gets a little weird, right? People think, oh, well, you will do a review because they gave it to you. I don't do review of the stuff if I don't like it, unless it's so bad that I want to make sure you don't buy this thing. But typically, I try stuff out that I either want to use or I need to, I want to recommend or something like that. I usually know it's good before I even try it because that's why I'm asking for it, because I'm like, I've heard this mic is amazing. I know this camera is really good. Let me see for myself. So a little bit in the beginning was gear from work. I'm also a gear junkie, right? So I've purchased a lot of things through the years, whether that be the ATR-2100, because everyone was talking about it. It's funny because I actually, that was one microphone, which you're hearing right now, by the way. I have a few others that I may plug in, but you're hearing the ATR-2100. Mike Phillips on Twitter, his hobby is microphones, and he was talking about this microphone, and I was actually recommending it way before I had it, not something I would typically do because I like to use it first, right, before you recommend something. But when it comes to someone like Mike, I 100% trust his opinion on microphones. There's another coincidence. His hobby is microphones. His name is Mike. That's true. But but at one point I was like, you know what? I just keep recommending this microphone. I have to get it. And so I bought it. You know, and then, you know, my first microphone was this AT2020, Audio-Technica 2020. It's a condenser microphone. Sounds great. Not exactly set up for most podcasting environments. So I eventually saved up, went to a Heil. So I've tried different things throughout the years. I've amassed a bunch of stuff through my own sort of issues with gear is, oh, I want that, right? As we all, a lot of us probably listening to the show have that issue.
Yeah, I should have a special like confession section maybe of the show. Yes. Just where I bought too many Heil PR40s and I need to confess it.
That I don't need or use this other piece of gear I spent a lot of money on.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like I said, it's sort of been an evolution through the years. Is some of it started off from work, some of it I bought, and now I can, you know, get gear given to me for review from B&H. So that's how I basically get my hands on a bunch of different types of gear. And there is so much more. Like, I want to go on a quest. Here's the quest I want. And I'm going to try to do this through B&H. Personally, unless you know the answer to this, there's not a mixer in the sub $200 range that I know of that can push a high OPR 40 or any dynamic microphone cleanly. I feel like I always have to add something to get the gain high enough to get my good signal to noise ratio, right? To make sure that the signal is loud enough. So I want to go on a quest to find that mixer or just get the answer is maybe it doesn't exist. And, you know, it's funny because I'm using an audio recorder right now to do this, and you can get that with an audio recorder. So I've got some things. These are ideas I have daily. there is a litany of things that I want to test out like this. So if you see that on my site at some point, it's because I went on some mission to buy stuff and test it.
Yeah, well, that's what I know. I have the PR40, and then it goes into a Mackie 1620i mixer, and which is way over what I need.
Yeah, it's a great microphone. I mean, a great mixer, but it's expensive.
Yeah, it was way overbought, but you can't take them back. At least that's what I told my wife.
yeah, exactly. Because there is a thing called eBay. It's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm lacking in gain, is basically, because the mixer itself, I have to like almost crank the gain up to 11, as they say in Spinal Tap, and yes, get it just to get it going properly, but and sounding decent. And so, which is why I'm doing, you know, the next purchase, I think, will be some sort of compressor item. But that's where something you had, we'll go a little gear geeky here. What was that? Looks like a little like cigar, just like an XLR. Yes.
You're hearing that right now too, even though there's nothing to hear. It's called a Fed Head.
Yeah.
There are two versions of this. There's a Fed Head and a Cloud Lifter. I happen to like the Fed Head because it's just that much more compact.
FET or FED?
FET head.
Right.
FET. Yep. And it's an inline preamp, essentially. It's a little thing you plug between your microphone and your XLR cable, or your XLR cable and your mixer, that gives you basically plus 20 to 22 decibels of clean. They say extra clean gain. So true. It's a little piece of magic.
And like, that's what's so interesting is like that idea, which you could buy, like the one I've sort of been lusting after is the DBX 286S yes, compressor, which is like a rack mount.
Yes.
Lots
following Christmas, I will own that.
Nice.
Me too. And I have one already. See, this is my issue. I already have a compressor.
Right.
But I'm like, I need the DBX.
But this, what's nice about this, and I'm looking at my desk here, and I've got the mixer, which takes up a ton of space, and then to find a, I don't have a rack yet or anything like that, throwing the DBX on the desk here and just kind of making chaos. And
have you seen my desktop? I built a desktop rack.
Oh.
Did you see that? Because I could not buy it. I'm not necessarily a DIY guy, but it doesn't exist. There wasn't a rack that was podcast friendly that fit on your desk. I built it. So I have a whole blog post on the Podcaster Studio. You'll have to check it out.
Yeah, I'll have to find that link. And one of the things I've been doing with guests on here actually is getting them to send me a photo or a couple of photos of their gear, their desk, their whatever setup that where they do the recording from, just because it, you know, adds a little visual to all the audio that we're talking about. So I'll request that of you if you don't. I'm sure you have stuff on your site elsewhere as well. That
there may be stuff already. Like right now, the setup is sad. I'm a bit transient at the moment. I'm going to build, I have a detached garage that is going to literally become completely redone and is going to become a studio.
Oh, nice.
But you know, yeah, it's sort of a man cave slash office. I work from home. So I'm working in my dining room at the moment. So you're hearing, but it, you know, the good thing about that is it's proof that, hey, you can do a lot with a little, right? I mean, the audio here should sound really good. Mm-hmm. Of course, we're on Skype, so that has some issues. I'm recording it here in studio as well, quote unquote in studio. But so yeah, if you saw a picture now, it'd just be an iMac with a recorder and a bunch of cables on the desk.
Well, yeah, that's exactly. So you know what? We'll pause for a quick sponsor break, and then we'll get into some of the gear that you're actually using right now, and then also just some of the stuff about your the Podcasters Roundtable too. That's a it's interesting how it kind of seemed like we started with video years ago and then video went away because it got hard and complicated. Mm-hmm. And then now it's kind of with things like YouTube, obviously, and other technologies kind of coming back again. And to have a little chat about video and podcasting and how that all interfaces. But I want to thank Campaign Monitor for sponsoring this episode of Show Me Your Mic, as well as Good Stuff. They've been a founding sponsor of Good Stuff, and we really, really appreciate them. They are. They just released their best, sort of a guide to the best email campaigns of 2014 that they saw go out, and so you can check that out at campaignmonitor.com on their blog for ideas and inspiration of what you might do with your own email campaign, which you can build with their template builder at canvas.cm. You can check it out. We use it here at Good Stuff for sending out our email newsletters. I'm design challenged at the best of times, and it makes it super easy just to lay out a really good looking email template, fill in your content, throw in some artwork. In our case, we use show art a lot, and write up your content, put in even they even support animated GIFs or GIFs, depending on where you live, and which works awesome. It's a fun little way to make a little bit interactive kind of email that goes out to, in our case, our listeners, maybe your clients, potential customers, that kind of thing. all sorts of awesome stats on who's clicked on what, who's shared, where they are. They have a great sort of Google Map view of as your email goes out and people open it. You can see little pop-ups of them on the map. See, it gives a real visual kind of perspective on where your, how far your reach is in a sense. For us as podcasters, it's often tough to sort of visualize that somebody over in the UK is actually listening to your show or reading your newsletter. And this is a great way that Campaign Monitor has enabled us in our situation to sort of see who all is out there and where they are. And it's always fun just to watch newsletters go out and see them get opened all over the world. So visit campaignmonitor.com to get started with your own newsletter. And we thank them for sponsoring Good Stuff and Show Me Your Mic. So, are you still there, Ray?
Yeah, I actually switched microphones on you.
I thought
in honor of your show, I had three microphones laid out in front of me. And so I switched. So I don't know how that sounds. You know, it's so funny because I said I was using the ATR2100 and I actually like that mic a lot because you're hearing the high LPR 40, which may or may not actually sound better. I did a test on my website or one of my episodes where I put the ATR2100, which is about a $50 microphone, next to the high LPR 40 and did post-production on them. And I doubt you can tell a difference. I mean, and so you're talking 50 versus about 300 because people lust after this microphone. Mm-hmm. And it's a great microphone. But, these days, you don't have to have it. And you can start with a $50 microphone and that may be the only microphone you ever need.
Yeah. That's what I think is, what's great about that one is it's, like you say on your gear guide, it's USB and XLR. So it gives you the ability, I think, to flex. So like you start off with just going straight into your computer. You don't have a mixer. You don't have anything else. You're just going straight into your computer, done. And you got that mic. Then you upgrade to a mixer later, maybe because you want to bring in other Skype guests or something, sort of do a Skype thesaurus thing, whatever. You still can keep using that same mic. Whereas in other situations, you'd have to then sell that mic, buy an XLR mic. Yeah. Or paperweight. Or a kid's toy. But, and that's, I know it, like, you look at the pictures of the two mics, and the PR40 looks like a fun mic to use.
Yeah, it's cool.
But at the end of the day, that's not what people are seeing. There's no, I think if I had it to do over again, I probably would have bought two, maybe three of the 2100s to have in the house with, I sometimes have people in my wife and other people doing stuff. And so it'd be fun just to have three mics, all the same, that I can quickly throw on and start using, rather than just having one mic that I use and then having a crappy old mic that doesn't sound as good. Because we almost should have done it the reverse, where we didn't tell. We told people you were using the PR40 first and then switch to the 2100, when in actuality you're doing the other way around, just to see if people actually... Because sometimes there's like, I don't know, audio snobs kind of like can say they can tell, but you know that they really can't.
Yep. Yeah. No, there's definitely built-in bias from what you've heard, right?
And so, especially where you're like compressing it down and, you know, all that stuff. Podcasters have talked about that. It's compressing it down to MP3. How much really is going to... There's no doubt that shows, you know, like the Twits shows, 5x5 shows, that they do sound good. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't know that they sound...
They can make those shows sound just as good with a $100 microphone, though. I mean, you know, the Shure SM58 is the classic. And, you know... The key is if you record it clean, right? So your microphone, if it gives you the ability to capture a wide dynamic range and it gets it into your recording clean, meaning there's not a lot of noise created by the microphone, then with post-production, you know, you can really round out that mic to sound mostly how you want. Now, I have found that some microphones, I'm like, oh, I just can't get it to this place, even with post-production, that the other microphone goes. But for the most part, you know, record it clean, and, you know, do a little post on it and, you know, they're going to sound, you know, depending on how you want it to sound, you can make it sound the way you want.
Right. And that's where I know for me years ago when I bought this PR40, it was kind of like I didn't have confidence that I could play with the settings well enough. And I figured, well, if I start with a really good mic, at least I'll know, if nothing else, as long as I don't screw it up, it'll sound good. But I was probably... You know, talking too close to the mic. There's all sorts of factors. That's what sometimes drives me batty with podcasting. Is there's so many variables at play. I'm talking into a microphone. If I talk too close or too far away, that's going to affect it. The mic is going to affect it. The cable could affect it a little bit. The mixer settings, there's all sorts of EQ settings on the mixer that could mess up what I'm recording. And then never mind all the effects and stuff I could add in after the fact. So I'm going to quit podcasting now, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
It's a good choice. You can have so much free time.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
You actually remember your kids' names now.
Right, exactly. All right. So what you were using before was that you're going from a PR40 into, you had mentioned this audio recorder. What is that?
So currently, so I was using the ATR, but now I'm on the PR40, and both of these were plugged in via XLR into, it's an audio recorder called the Tascam DR60D. And this thing it's built for DSLR video. At least it was created for that, because it has a couple features that you would want if you're recording dual sound, which is sound outside of the camera. It also has the ability to mount the camera to the top because of the way it has like a 1/4-20 thread on the top of it. But it can be used just like an audio recorder, just like I'm using it now. So that's the current audio recorder I'm using. I have a couple.
And so that's actually functioning as your preamp before I get the audio?
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that is working as the preamp. It supplies, in this case, phantom power, which you don't need for dynamic mics, but I mentioned I have the FET head. So the FET head needs phantom power to power it, and it does not pass it on to your microphone, but it powers the FET head, and that is then plugged into the microphone. So it is a preamp as well. If you don't use phantom power, if you have dynamic microphones, then again, you just set the gain settings to where you want them and hit record.
And so it records onto a SD card of some sort that you've got
right
in there.
Yep.
And are you messing around with much on, like, I'm just looking at a picture of it and, you know, there's all sorts of little dials and knobs and things on there, but is it basically just a glorified tape recorder, or do you do stuff to it, to the audio within this device?
Yeah, I don't. I have a limiter and a low cut on right now. The low cut, probably not necessary. It's actually at like 40 hertz. It's not enough to affect much of anything. So the question remains, why do I have it on? But you can put on certain things like compression and stuff like that. I typically don't do that because I'm going to post-process my audio. So I don't want to bake in those settings. But I do have a limiter on as well because, I don't know, maybe I guess I think we're going to yell on this show.
It gets pretty intense at the end.
It gets intense. Yeah. I was planning to get pretty upset. It's a completely different show than I thought it was. But so I don't do a whole lot in terms of any kind of processing in the unit itself. It has this really unique function that getting extra geeky. Typically, people want to do a mix minus to do like Skype recordings or something like that via Google Hangouts. But you need a mixer to do that because it has an auxiliary send. Well, the headphone output of this, you can monitor any channel that's going into the Tascam. You can monitor only that channel. So I'm sending you only channel one, which has my microphone. So effectively, I'm using an audio recorder as a mix minus, because I can bring you in as well, but you don't hear yourself back. So it has a really unique feature. It lets me do some extra geeky things in terms of some stuff I do for Podcasters Roundtable. But also, you know, I always tell people when they're choosing gear, ask me first, because every setup is so unique. Like we talked about, the ATR may be the only microphone you ever need. $50, USB, open up Audacity and go. That might be your podcast. I mean, if it's just you talking about something, you're done. I mean, the audio is fantastic. You're not going to do interviews. You're not going to have co-hosts. It's just me on microphone talking to you. So that's it. $50, high quality, super ease of use, USB, free software, Audacity. You are done. So I always tell people, ask me, because I see these all-in-one packages that people sell. And yeah, you might get nice audio at the end of it, but you don't need all of that. And a lot of times people get overwhelmed. They're like, I have all this professional gear that I either don't know how to use, I don't want to learn how to use it, or it's way more than I need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's exactly sometimes how I felt with it too, where it's just like, okay, this is great. I've got the stuff, but you have to know how to use this. Like with great tools comes great responsibility or something like that. That's why I think this is so neat. This, because I asked you on the exclusive Ray Ortega Google Plus Hangout or community, if you're a Patreon supporter of Ray, you can join. You know, would you have used this thing if you didn't come at it from the DSLR photography video world? Because it wouldn't be like most podcast folks like myself would have looked at it and thought, oh, okay, that's well, if I was doing video with a DSLR, that's what I would need. But I'm not, so I'm not even going to bother. And you said, right, that like that's where it came on your radar, basically, because of some of that experience you had. And that's, I think there's lots of opportunities for little things like that where hacks, almost in a sense, of other utilities and tools that just because someone else hasn't done it yet doesn't mean it won't work for what we're trying to accomplish here, which is get audio out to people, basically.
So. Totally. I mean, one thing that's come over from, I feel like, DSLR world, the Zoom H4n was huge for DSLR because DSLRs, if you know, the audio they record is terrible. If you plug microphones into it, it's not good. And all has to do with the preamp. It's just noisy. It's not built for that. And so in the early days, people, if they want a good audio, you record it separately. The Zoom H4n was the device that people were recommending. I have it. But now they've upgraded that to the Zoom H5 and H6. And so podcasters may be a little more familiar with those, that sort of the Zoom series. Mm-hmm. But the H5 is also fantastic. And I set up people all the time with just a nice microphone, which may be the ATR or like a Shure SM58 or something like that. I actually don't set that up. It is usually the ATR these days. That mic is newer. It hasn't always been an option. It is a newer mic, only maybe a year or two old. But I set people up with that, you know, the recorder and the microphone, and that's all they need. And a lot of people have plans to go mobile as well. And the, you know, having that small recorder, you can just throw that in a pocket or your backpack and you're out of the studio recording high quality audio. So again, it really comes down to what are you planning to do, right? I mean, if you want to go in the field, you've got a 16 channel mixer, you know, good luck.
I do have a backpack with a power supply, a gas tank for the generator.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very portable. So if like that idea, I guess, if because what I think people, I guess, what's the other show? Startup, Alex Bloomberg's podcast about podcasting and network or whatever. That one where he's doing interviews with people, you know, his wife, and then he's in a coffee shop, maybe with his buddy, his partner, whatever, talking about stuff. Something like an H5, H6 would be what he was likely using, right?
Actually, I know exactly what he's using for a couple of reasons. I asked him on Twitter. No,
well, that's a good way.
Because I was listening to the show. And I was like, how is he getting good audio in these certain weird situations where I couldn't imagine having a big microphone in someone's face was very conducive to the story. Turns out it is. But so he is, if you know him, he's from This American Life. He was a producer for a long time, Planet Money, these huge radio shows, NPR shows that are also really successful in podcasting. And I wanted to know how he was recording this, because like you said, he gathers interviews with his wife or he's on the street talking to somebody. So he actually uses a shotgun microphone that he hand holds and it goes into like a Tascam. I think it's like the, gosh, I'm going to forget, DR40 Mark II or I don't know, something like that. It's basically a decent, I think, Sennheiser microphone. I posted this on Twitter. And a Tascam recorder. It you know, has two XLR inputs, basically off-the-shelf stuff that you would find, you know, a podcaster using. Not that expensive, but, you know, he knows what to use. And so he comes from a radio side where this is how they gathered a lot of their audio content, where if you go out in the street and you talk to somebody, you've got this nice shotgun microphone because it's got good rejection, it's got good quality if you're pointing it right at your source, and he just holds it, right? And so he only has one microphone. I said, do you entertain the thought of having two channels? Because he's always going to have all his audio on one channel. But he is oftentimes, he's part of the audio and even the surrounding sounds are part. So it's all of the way, the style that he does. And he will hold the microphone to his mouth and talk, and then he'll just pass it over to the person that he's talking to. And I also hung out with him in San Francisco because if you don't know creativelive.com, it's awesome. It's basically free live streaming, amazing content. He put on a workshop.
Oh, right. A couple months ago. That you were on that. I, that should have been part of my notes because I saw your hand go up and ask some
questions. That's right. I think you tweet. I think it's in real time. You asked me. I was sitting there and you asked me, are you there? And then you're like, wait, I actually just saw you stand up on video. So yeah. I guess you are. I guess that answers that. So, and I asked him again. He showed the setup. I took a picture of it and tweeted it. And I asked him again some of these questions about the setup, about two channels and everything. And this is the way he does it. And it sounds great. But he is literally, it's so funny because he's like, you know what? You have to, does he feel stupid sometimes? He has his headphones on. He has a recorder in one hand, a shotgun mic in the other. And he goes into public like this everywhere. He walks around the house like this and puts the microphone in front of his wife. And so people think, oh, he must be doing these, like he must be having a lav mic and doing all these things. But no, he literally is just wearing all this stuff, looking goofy out in the public. And he's like, you got to let that go. It's all about, you know, for him, it's all about the story and getting the recording. So he just does it. And you might see him on the street with all this gear on.
Which is, again, one of those things where a lot of podcasters might think, I want to do that kind of show and do that. But then when you actually think about it, like, that means you have to leave your house and you have to, like, I'm talking to myself as well here. I'm not trying to, like, label somebody a nerd and a recluse, but, like, you have to get out of your house. You have to be comfortable talking to a stranger or a relative stranger sometimes with a microphone and look goofy doing it, but also still trying to maintain this semblance of a good discussion and a normal, because that's what he does a great job of, and the NPR folks, obviously, in general, is they have this amazing kind of normal looking discussion, sounding discussion, all the while, like you said, they have headphones, they're hand holding the mic themselves. They don't always necessarily have an assistant who's, you know, miking them the conversation or whatever. It's just kind of a field reporter and it takes a lot of that kind of, like, just personal guts and sweat.
It's difficult. It's difficult, and it's oftentimes it's scary, right? I mean, I even battle this myself. Like, I'm not the most outgoing, sociable person. I was very shy growing up until I got to college and decided to throw that out the window and be a little bit more, bit more interactive. But I'm still shy by nature, I would say. And which some people might think that's weird because I'm on video and all this stuff. But it's easy when we're, you know, sort of not really in public. We're in public by throwing our recordings out there, but you're not actually in public, right?
Yeah.
But you know, I go out and I shoot video in public. Oftentimes I have to gather interviews and I'm there with my camera, and sometimes I have to sometimes talk myself into, hey, you need to go over there, get into that crowd to get that shot. Like, I have to, because it's easy. Especially if you have a zoom lens, you're like, oh, I'll just stand back here and I'll get the shot. And that's not it. That's not where the shot is at, or that's not the person you need to talk to, is the person right next to you or the person who's willing to. It's sometimes I find myself pushing myself often, like, hey, go do it. You got to go do it. You know, when you get back to the edit, you're going to love what you have. So it's even a personal challenge for me.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with that. There's friends I know in real life here, like where I live, who would never even guess that I would be talking to, you know, you being a relative stranger for the most part, we've never talked before, and have it carrying on an hour and a half or whatever conversation about stuff. That like the idea of me doing that is completely foreign to them, and like there's no way. Whereas, you know, obviously people who listen to the show, it's who I am and that's what I do. But I especially doing video, I find, and I've never really done in the field, quote unquote, in the field recording of audio stuff, so I can't speak to that. But I know doing video stuff, it's terrifying sometimes. Like, I don't know how some folks, you just, like you said, you psych yourself up, get over that fear of being rejected or whatever, and stick a camera in someone's face willingly, obviously, not just confrontational, but, you know, and do that, because it's, you just feel like a dummy sometimes lugging all this gear around. But yeah.
Totally. Anyway. It's definitely something I think a lot of people look at it and think it's just natural. And I think a lot of people actually have to work hard to put themselves out there and get good stuff. It's not necessarily easy. Sure, some people are naturally born for that, but, you know, my boss, Chris, he's a really accomplished street photographer. And it's funny because we'll go to different cities around the US, live streaming conferences that we do. And on our downtime, we'll go walk the streets of Boston or Philly or New Orleans or something like that. And because we'll spend hours out there shooting photography. And I do photography as a hobby, so I'm done within, like, you know, half hour or whatever. I got my pictures. But he's really accomplished street photographer. But he doesn't have that filter, almost to a point where it's too much. I mean, he will get right in your face
right.
to a total stranger, take the shot. He gets amazing images. Now he's got, it's something in him that's different. I can't do it. I actually step back like about 50 feet and I'm just waiting for him to get punched or something, right?
Yeah, like you get embarrassed for him or something.
completely, you nailed it,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
I'm like, I'm uncomfortable, right, by the situation and I'm not even doing anything.
Yeah.
And I've tried, I was like, in the beginning, I was like, oh, I'm going to try to do some cool street photography, which typically means you have to get involved. And I can feel the sort of, the non-comfort level of a lot of people. And I project my feelings on the people, I guess. And if I'm uncomfortable, I feel like they are. And so in that situation, that's not for me. I'm not good at that. And he's really good at that.
Yeah. Yeah. You described my wife and I, our relationship to a T there, where I project what I'm feeling onto other people and think she shouldn't or whatever. And there's sorts of fights there. So good marriage therapy as well. I was going to mention just this show will hopefully go out today, December 23rd. And that course actually with Alex Bloomberg at Creative Live, which I'll put a link to in the show notes, is on sale right now, $20 off. I think it's regularly $99. It'll be on for $79. Would you say you were there? So would you say it's worth checking out if you're at all interested in that sort of storytelling aspect of podcasting, or who should kind of be interested in that course?
If you listen to, I guess, Serial and Startup, and that is the type of thing you want to do, if you want to be a better interviewer, the way they titled that is really, I think, is wrong. Because what is it? It's power your podcast with storytelling or something like that.
Yeah.
Don't think you're going to get much about podcasting in there. It's really not. It is his 20 plus years of experience of producing those type of shows, and really how to talk to people, how to interview. So if storytelling is something you're interested in, that's a great thing to look at. You're going to glean a lot of stuff from his experience storytelling, but the podcasting is just kind of thrown in there, I think, because he was doing a podcast, because it's popular. You can do any of that. Does not have to involve podcasting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I think, yeah, it's, I watched, I think the first day of it anyways, live, and definitely it wasn't, there's better ways to learn about the technical stuff. Probably Ray's site is probably where you could learn a lot more about the technical stuff of podcasting, but certainly, yeah, interview skills, storytelling, that kind of stuff is what I was sort of keen on. So you can check that out. Even at $99, it's still a pretty good, there's a lot of material in there, not to shill for them too much.
And here's a secret, actually. There is there's a secret. If you are not interested in spending the money, you can catch, Creative Live does a lot of replays where if you're sitting there live, you can watch it. So check their calendar. They may replay that for free. Mm-hmm. So if you sit there, on Friday, the 16th of whatever month it is, they'll be showing it live streamed as a sort of a rerun and you can catch it for free. So check that out too. If you're like, well, I really want to see that, I don't have the money.
Yeah.
You can always check out their stuff that way.
Yeah, that's a great idea too. I know a friend of mine, my brother-in-law, he recorded, I think, some of their, this probably breaks some terms of service for them. I don't know how it would work, but he's over in Australia and he's streaming it and he captured it, using ScreenFlow or something, whatever he used to record the videos for. So not, I'm sure, yes. I started doing that with the Alex Bloomberg one. I was like, I should try this, but then I needed to use the computer and it's kind of a pain. So
yeah,
but
it is a pain.
And for $79, you get HD video and all sorts of course material and stuff too. So it's pretty cheap, but anyways. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, if you watch it in real time when they're actually live streaming it, when you're recording it, it's free. So I've given away, whole weekends to catch like amazing courses, maybe a Final Cut Pro 10 course. And I will sit there because if you watch it in real time, it's free. And they also have a discounted rate during real time. So I absolutely love it. I've been a big promoter of it for a long time because it's amazing content that's really available to everyone. You can either exchange some of your money or your time.
Yeah.
And I promote them all the time because I think it's so amazing. They're also what I would say gold standard for web streaming. Their production is amazing.
Yeah.
Audio fantastic. Yeah. Video is amazing. Their live streaming, everything is top notch.
Yeah. I remember and improving too. Like when they first launched, it was a little rough, and just the studio looked a little rougher, but they were, it was definitely working out the kinks and stuff. And
they opened a whole new studio here in San Francisco. And I will say, if you are near Seattle or San Francisco, this is another trip to make. You can apply to be in the audience of these. And that's what I did. it's amazing, especially the San Francisco one. Their food is awesome. It is so much fun. If you are a production geek at all, oh man, it is, it's a blast to go participate in one of these workshops. It's, they treat you so well. And, it's literally, it's like going to camp. It's like production camp. It's so much fun.
Well, that's what's good with the, like attending a live streaming of it, or either in person or just watching it. You know, you're getting this thing for free. You could go spend $500, $1,000 on up, I'm sure, on a in-person training session for Final Cut or whatever at a school, and getting it, at least getting this where it's nearly as good, if not better in some cases, with a lot of the folks that they get. It's free, and you just, so you devote a week and you get for a weekend or whatever. Okay, so quickly-ish, the YouTube channel that you've set up, you mentioned about for doing DSLR video and stuff, but you're also using it for the Podcasters Roundtable, which is a great series of just sort of whatever, 3 to 5, I don't know, however many you've had on total, but podcasters on each episode, picking a topic and kind of like in the spirit of what I do too, where it's less about the gear and specifics, more about, I like to say the philosophy of podcasting, but sort of headier stuff. Not that it's super deep, but just the thoughts about podcasting that we don't often get to debate or discuss or things like that. And so, I guess, first of all, why did you choose to do it in video form? I think you do an audio version as well, right? You
can, yeah, right.
Yeah. But, you know, you're doing it in video and releasing it in video using Google Hangouts. What was the sort of moment or the decision behind doing it that route?
Yeah. So the Google Hangouts on Air as a platform was the motivation for that. When I saw that Google Hangouts or Google Plus was going to do this thing, I guess they started with Hangouts and then they said they were going to do, which Hangouts was just sort of like, you know, video conferencing, but there was no recording feature or anything like that. There was no live, I guess it was live, but anyways, it was a different, it's a different animal.
Didn't punch it to YouTube right away or anything. Like it was kind of like,
none of that.
Yeah.
So they said they're going to do Hangouts on Air, which was basically a live streaming platform. And, so you could go out to unlimited. That's the thing. Hangouts was 10 people at any time could watch. Yeah. That's no good for a podcast. But a live streaming to as many people as you want, that is. And so when I heard that and started seeing some celebrities getting test accounts and I knew this was going to go to the public, I said, I have a show for that. Because what we're doing right now is something, you know, which is two podcast geeks on Skype geeking out. This is a conversation I would have just normally without even recording it. I would just geek out with my friends. And I said, I want to do that basically roundtable style live. And that'll be the show. And it really has turned into more than I thought it would be. I thought it would just be me gathering with the you know, the geeky friends of mine who are in podcasting, just talking about it. But people really love the format. And so the whole motivation was the platform. It made it so easy for us to gather, right, on video. It didn't need to be video, but it happened to be video, and talk, you know, and, you know, have several people on, up to 10 as far as Google Plus Hangouts on Air works. And then it just gets recorded automatically and it goes into YouTube, and in limitless, in, you know, unlimited amount of people can watch this happen in real time. And then I just do an audio version as well and put that into a podcast feed, because I'm not even sure that was the intent in the beginning, but as a podcaster, I'm like, well, of course, I might as well make it available as a podcast. And a lot of people listen to it that way. So the platform itself was completely the motivation for Podcasters Roundtable.
Yeah, I think that's, I've often said on the show too, that that platform is a, feels like a vastly underutilized platform in the circles that I'm in anyways in podcasts. I know there's lots of podcasters and YouTube whatever personalities and types who are well aware of Google Plus, but it's kind of like, because it's the gateway to it is through Google Plus, it kind of got this bad rap, I think, on certain nerd groups or whatever, I don't know.
Yeah.
And rather than seeing it as the opportunity for really easy and free Google or video streaming, like you said, it was kind of like this social experiment by Google that I don't want to be a part of. And they're forcing me to do, so I don't want to touch it at all. And so I think a missed opportunity there for a lot of folks, but their loss is our gain, obviously, for missing out on that. But the one thing that has sort of vexed me a bit, and this probably goes back to being a little bit more overcomplicated in gear for my sake, but there's probably folks like me out there, heaven forbid. But the doing the video part of it is great, but then sort of repurposing that audio, and you post a little bit of a video to your Patreon thing, but talk to me a bit about how you're getting the audio out of there to be workable and usable in sort of a traditional audio podcast format as well.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people, they're interested in how can I use Google Plus Hangouts on air to record my show and then make that into a podcast. And a lot of times the answer is, well, they just, you, people will tell them, hey, just rip the audio out of the video. And there are, it's a nice backup for me. And there are plenty of rounds, as I call them, episodes, as you laymen would know them as.
As so fancy.
There are plenty of rounds where I have done that. I've just taken the audio, ripped it out of the video, and that goes in the feed. And the quality is, it's passable. Let's say it's passable. It works. Mm. And you know, the funny thing is most people will not notice. My listeners happen to be podcasters, so they have a more geekier ear for that type of thing, but most people will not notice.
Well, and probably too, where once you set the bar of like, you know, recorded audio that you normally would do, and right. then you throw in an episode that's just recorded or using the Google video, you know, stripping out the audio from the video, people can tell right away there.
You'll notice if you go backwards, that's
for
sure.
Yeah, but if you just start with the Google video, I guess mm-hmm. you could probably get by with that. And
exactly. And you could, but you know, me being me and gear yeah. and quality and all that stuff, I don't do it that way. I basically use this recorder that I'm using right now. And just like I'm doing this with you, I've got my microphone goes into one channel and actually a little different. Since the ATR allows you to do USB as well, I actually interface the Hangout with the USB. So I'm using both the outputs at the same time, which is amazing that like, the microphone does that.
Yeah, exactly. For a $50. Because to do that with a Heil.
Yeah, forget it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can't. I mean, you could, I guess.
Convoluted.
Yeah, you'd buy another USB-based mixer or device. Whatever. Anyways, yeah, preamp.
Yeah, it's not easy. But this microphone, I just plug in USB and I plug in my XLR. So I do that. I also bring the Hangout into the recorder onto its own track because there are multiple inputs on here. And I record that. So what you're getting in the audio version of the show is you're getting my nice microphone direct to the recorder so it doesn't go through the internet. So it doesn't get processed by Google. And so that's really clean. And people are used to that. In fact, they're more used to like if the host audio is really good, but the guest is not as good, that's accepted because people are used to radio shows where people call in on phones or it's Skype or something, right? Yeah. So there's a perception there. Whereas if yours was really bad, but the guest it was really good, that would be weird. So anyways, you get my really good audio and you get the Google Hangout on air is mixed with all the other people on the Hangout. However, I think, this is unconfirmed, but I think the quality of the audio that you're getting in real time is better. Well, it's certainly better than what you're going to get out of the archived YouTube version because that's then compressed further, right, for mm-hmm. YouTube. So that is confirmed. I mean, I'm capturing the audio as it's coming across in real time into my recorder. And then you will see the archived video. That audio may be okay as well, but it has been further compressed by YouTube for the video archive. So
on your
I'm capturing, yeah,
yeah. Sorry to interrupt. I just want to get so on your let's say an iMac or whatever you're using, but yep. you're to get that Google Hangout audio live. You're just going out the audio like the headphone jack or whatever audio line out of the iMac. Or what's your process there?
So I mean, because everything's handled with Google Hangouts, I mean, I'm literally just sending my ATR via USB into the Hangout, right?
Yeah,
and that's it. I mean,
but then how do you record that back onto the 60D, your guests, I guess, in this case?
The guests are coming out of the, it is an iMac, but any line out. I'm actually using a Griffin iMic, but all that is like a USB sound card that gives you analog inputs, which right. is 3.5 millimeter. You can use the headphone output of your computer. That literally just goes into the Tascam.
Right. Okay. And that's what I was, yeah, there's nothing sort of pre anything or whatever in line there. It's just your eighth.
There's no processing. No, it's just exactly. Yeah. Eighth inch into the, well, it's converted. Actually, no. I mean, because there is an eighth inch input for channels 3 and 4 on the Tascam.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So it actually goes eighth inch to eighth inch right into the recorder. There's no other processing. And here's the extra step is I will then post-process the audio, right, for they are separate channels. So I can post-process my side and then the guest side, which, you know, you have to sort of aim for the middle when you're post-processing.
Yeah.
One channel has several people on it, but what's good is I can then fix levels, right? So if you've got one guest that's really, really low and one guest that's high, I can make some adjustments. Plus I can do some compression and EQ and all that stuff. Although I will say, if you do the key is to make sure in the quote unquote pre-show, when you gather before you hit start your broadcast, Google Hangouts has this app called Control Room. But before that, you want to get levels, right? Go through each person, have everyone be quiet. Ask one person to tell you what they had for lunch. We did all the time for our video stuff. And just to get people talking. And make sure the level's good. Have them switch their levels. Have them use a different microphone. You know, if they have an earbud mic, anything to get better audio in, because it's always about how well you record it. And, you know, what you, the audio you send to the recorder, you want to make that as good as possible, because post-processing, you can only go so far. So even out those levels best you can. And Google Hangouts has all these apps, which is really cool. They are always giving you new stuff for Hangouts, which is really cool. And one of these is called, I think it's called Control Room. And you can actually get some sliders where you can adjust someone's audio. So if they don't have that ability for whatever reason, you can bring them up or turn them down. So balance your audio, get all your guests as best as possible to be even before you start recording.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, again, like we talked about maybe before we start recording, but like Skype, you're limited a lot with what you can do. And the Hangouts thing is a great way to use some of that. And it's, I guess it's maybe a little bit more complicated getting people into Hangouts for some reason. It's maybe more intimidating. I don't know what it is exactly as a tool as to why, like Skype, you know, is sort of the de facto standard. And so, especially if you're going outside of the traditional podcasting circles, mm-hmm. you and I have a bit of a bonus or a what's the word I'm looking for? A freebie or a gift in that we talk with podcasters. And so they come prepared generally for this kind of stuff. But yeah, if you're going outside of those circles where you're not sure what kind of mic they might show up, if they have a mic and those kinds of things, then
Skype has become it's a verb, just like, Googling something, right? It's like, oh, well, I'll Skype you. Right. Yeah. I mean, like most people know what you mean when you say Skype. I mean, you know, CNN or, you know, news agencies, they all use Skype. So most people have heard of Skype and or have an account. So you're like, hey, I'd like to do this interview, you know, with so-and-so who doesn't do this type of thing online. And you ask them, hey, you know, do you have Skype? And most of the times, oh yeah, I have Skype. So because they talk with their family. So Skype is just, it's ubiquitous, right? Whereas Google Plus, it's like, oh, I've never done a Hangout. In fact, so what's one of the really cool things about the Roundtable, what I enjoy is that, you know, I say that it's podcasting, learning podcasting through discussion. So it's podcasters talking about podcasting. And my real goal is to bring in the experience of all these other podcasters, because back to throwing this way back to my whole thing, whereas you're becoming the go-to people, anyone who produces a podcast has a lot of cool information to share, but not everyone has a podcast about podcasting, right?
So hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. So this is your chance to share something that, you know, you probably have that's really valuable to everybody who's learning podcasting, and you don't need a whole show for it. So you come on, you share the experience, and people, I say, don't listen to me or Dave or Daniel, any one person. Listen to everybody. Cherry pick the pieces you want for your show that will help you. Take those back to your show and implement that. And so, you know, Google Plus, I actually totally derailed myself. I don't remember what the point was, but, you know, Google Plus, gosh, what was my point? We were talking about how not everyone has Google Plus or, I was going to say that oftentimes people who come on the show who are podcasters have never done a Hangout on air. They're like, oh, hey, this is my first Hangout on air. I was like, oh, cool. I'm breaking you in. But so even the geeky people, there's a lot of them who have still never done a Hangout on air. So translating that over to the normal person, you know, quote unquote, normal person, the person who doesn't do this stuff on a regular basis, they are going to be probably really confused by Google Plus, even though it's not hard. Essentially, I think if you have Gmail these days, which again is ubiquitous, you have a Google Plus account. So if I sent you a link, you would have to do is click on the link and you would essentially be in the Hangout. It's not complex, but it definitely is perceived as much more complex.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's what we use at Good Stuff occasionally. Actually, there's one tonight we're doing, we call it our happy hour hangouts with some of the hosts and stuff of other shows. And a lot of them, too, don't ever use it outside of when I force them to come and talk. Nice. And again, I think it's a podcaster thing, too, where nobody can see my face right now. I can't see your face. There's no webcam, anything going on here. Right. And I think a lot of podcasters could benefit, not just because I'm sure they're very handsome or beautiful or whatever, but also just from the seeing a human face behind some of the stuff that you're doing really helps your audience understand. Even I remember one listener saying after we did one of our happy hour hangout things and just sort of got to actually see the faces of some of the people that she had listened to for 40 episodes on a podcast, it was like, I'm actually more engaged and want to go back and listen now again, because not like re-listen. She wasn't that desperate, but right. to listen, but just now that she knows how Adam in that case, or Tim or whoever it was, says something and reacts to things. And it just kind of gives that mental picture that you can go back to and then just listen and helps fill out that color in, I guess, the picture.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're human beings. Like that's how we communicate. We pick up a lot of nonverbal stuff, right? When you watch someone talk, it's like, why would I want to sit there and watch just talking head video? But if you don't, it's so funny because I'll go to a conference, people are like, oh my gosh, you're nothing like you sound, or you know what I mean? Like you're nothing like I pictured you. So if anything, it lets people see who you are, and maybe the imaginary you is better. maybe just stay off webcam at that right. point. But, but you know what? We communicate best when we can see each other, look into each other's eyes. And it does add, it increases the intimacy of the whole thing, right? Podcasting is already very intimate. You feel like you know the person. And so, gosh, if you can see them, you really feel even that much more of a connection.
Yeah. And so would you, I guess, I mean, it's kind of a loaded question, I guess, because you're using this, but would you recommend podcasters investigate at least using something like YouTube and Google Hangouts as a method for doing their podcasts at all? Like, is it
I would
worth
say
it in
like,
terms of audience even and numbers? And that's always, is it worth the effort, all that kind of stuff?
Probably not for like, not for numbers. I wouldn't say like start a YouTube channel or start it. Well, even that might work, but, or start Google Hangouts on Air so you can massively grow your audience. First of all, if you have time, right? Because it's just another level of production. It's just more stuff you have to do. So if you have time to integrate video, a YouTube channel is great. There are ways to do that with your podcast that are specific for YouTube that we could probably talk about another time. But Google Hangouts on Air, what I love is very easy way to dip your toe or to get started in video, to get started in live streaming, to get started in interviews. So it really is like one platform that can get you instantly into all these things, including YouTube. So if you have the time to add that in, it's worth experimenting with. But I wouldn't say, podcasters get overwhelmed. They're like, oh my gosh, I have to add this thing, right? I have to have a Facebook page because everyone does, right?
Yeah.
Which is not true. Like, add in the stuff you have time for, and if you like it, then bring it into your show. But don't go there because you feel like you have to. I don't feel like it's going to do anything so dramatic to your show that if you're not there, you're missing out on some kind of massive audience or something.
Yeah, I would agree. That's we've taken sort of that approach with Good Stuff, is just sort of experimenting a little bit, seeing what sticks, what doesn't, and not throwing our full weight behind something like that yet. And you get. There's the folks who love that kind of stuff, who, as far as watching it, and you get their feedback, and that can be encouraging, which is good, but it doesn't necessarily mean that your entire audience is going to follow you there, and likely won't, because they tune in because they just want audio. They want to listen while they're jogging or washing dishes,
yeah,
or whatever.
The majority of your audience is still going to come from the audio. And again, I have an audio-only feed. I mean, it's time-shifted, right? It can be heard anytime you want. You can watch the video anytime you want, but it is easier to take audio with you and listen. So the majority of the audience for that show that is built on this live streaming video platform comes from the audio podcast. So, yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of podcasts, before we wrap up, one thing I ask every guest is, what podcasts do you listen to, and what apps do you listen to them, or app do you listen to them on? So I don't know if you have, do you have time to listen to podcasts, right?
I used to have so many podcasts, like 60, 80 in my feed, that now it all fits on one page of Pocket Cast. So I use Pocket Cast, and my phone is charging up, so it's killing me right now because I'm like, oh, I could quickly look at it. But from memory, I mean, some of the shows that I listen to, obviously, I I enjoy Startup. It's the most recent one that I like, but it's not regular. So that is a problem in podcasting, right? It just comes out when it does. But when it does come out, I enjoy it. But that's the newest of them. One of the oldest shows that I listen to, audio only, that I still highly enjoy is Dave Jackson. He co-hosts the Roundtable with me. Dave Jackson does the School of Podcasting. And Dave is, I think he may be the first podcast about podcasting. He is truly an OG of podcasting. He was there in the very beginning. And so I love that show and have listened to that show from the day I found it way back in, who knows, gosh, 07 or something. I used to get in trouble at work for listening to that show. I did the one earbud thing. Oh, nice. And I'd be on the floor working and they'd be like, you can't do that and take that out. And I was like, okay. And then of course, a few minutes later, you know, an hour later, they have to tell me to take it back out again. But because at the time I was like, you know, I was literally Johnny Five, like need more input. Nice. Like I was just trying to get, that's a short circuit joke.
Yeah. Really, I know. I don't know. If, yeah. See how many listeners get it, but.
Yeah. Steve Guten, was it Gutenberg? Anyways.
Yeah.
80s humor. So I listen to those shows. Gosh, I have Twit on my thing. I don't really listen to that show anymore. It's so funny because Dave put out a tweet the other day asking for, or maybe it was an email, asking for your favorite podcast. And, you know, if you could pick just one, I don't know what that would be, yeah, that's an interesting question. Honest. It's a tough question. I have, you know, it's funny because here's how these things work. Sometimes, even in my own niche, I don't know. I'm amazed that I don't know something exists. So I don't recall how I found Show Me Your Mic, this show, but it was awesome when I found it. I've listened to it. I think I've listened to you a lot on the plane for some reason. I'm like, oh, I'm going to cue that up for the plane. So I've got Show Me Your Mic. Yeah, Good Stuff Network, which I love all your all your stuff is beautiful, like your website and your graphics and audio production. It's all very good. So
well, thanks.
Had, you know, thumbs up to that, but really recent. I mean, I didn't know you were doing that, until recently. So that's been a cool discovery. So I do listen to a lot of, podcasts about podcasting, believe it or not. It's part of just sort of staying up and seeing what other people are doing in my niche. I tried Serial. I actually listened to the first one. I tweeted out the other day. I listened to the first one and then none of them. And I'm like, I'm going to listen to the last one, just see how it turned out.
Nice. Skip to the end.
And I actually didn't even make it through the whole last one. So I just wanted to see, was there an answer? But yeah. I never didn't get my answer. So yeah, those are just a couple of shows I listen to, but I have maybe just like 8 or 10 shows. And ever since I discovered podcasting, I have gone to bed with one earbud in my ear. Used to be with a notepad as well, but pretty geeky, not exactly the most romantic way to right. to go to sleep at night. But, you know, I am married now, so, you know, I get in bed well after, you know, my wife gets in bed. And so yeah. These are the things. That's what marriage looks like, people. One earbud.
I can't claim to have done that yet. But I could see a day coming where trying to keep up with all the shows. Yeah. That's
yeah. Well, that's my podcast time. Like here's the thing. I work from home. I don't commute. So that's, it's like, me, when do you listen to podcasts?
Because I used to commute and that I would listen. And then working in someone else's office, often I would, like for someone else, I would put a podcast on and work. And then working for myself now, it's the same thing. I don't have the commute anymore. And I often just kind of like, there's so many things. Maybe I was lazier when I was working for someone else. I don't know. But right. It just kind of like, there's so many interruptions. And producing more podcasts myself, it's just harder. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I can't listen to a podcast while we're having a podcast going, recording a podcast.
Exactly. Yeah, I do a lot of editing for work and it's like,
yeah,
I'm listening to stuff, so I can't actually listen to a podcast. So
yeah, exactly. So cool. Well, one thing I was going to mention for folks, you have, I noticed on the sign up page or the Podcasters Roundtable page, there is a sign up form if you're wanting to be on it. That's, I know obviously there's a lot of podcasters who listen to this show who I've hopefully made well aware you can come on this show as well. There's a sign up scheduler thing at the top of the Show Me Your Mic page, but also for Podcasters Roundtable. That's something, is that correct? I'm assuming that's there.
Yep. Podcast Roundtable, there's even a tab. There's several ways to get to that page, but it's up top, says like be a guest.
Yeah.
Or you can go to podcastersroundtable.com/guest. And it serves two purposes. It's helps me build the email list, but most importantly, it tells you sort of what I'm looking for from a future guest, and it gives you the opportunity to tell me what you want to talk about, because we just have discussions on, you know, I just pick a topic And I choose people not based on when they signed up for the list, but what they have told me they want to talk about. So I go into the list, you know, which is just a spreadsheet from Google Docs, and I look for people who said, hey, I want to talk about monetization, or I want to talk about growing your show, or whatever it is. And then I send you an email and say, hey, saw you signed up, saw you're interested in this subject, you have something to offer, some type of expertise, and come on the roundtable and let's talk about it. So that's pretty much how it works.
Yeah. And so where else can folks follow you, tweet at you, all that kind of stuff? What's your...
Yeah, I love Twitter just because, not because it's, you know, people think that, oh, if you promote on Twitter, you're going to grow your show, right? No, it's just how I love to talk to people. So it's fast, it's easy. So Twitter at Podcast Helper, thepodcasterstudio.com is my other podcast about podcasting, which is just, it's more solo. I do interviews, but it can be really deep dive. I did 2 hours on compression alone. So
yeah,
kudos to anyone who's made it through that.
Yeah.
But
which again, it's a great resource because that's something where, whether you listen to every episode or you cherry pick, as I often do with yep. shows about podcasting, where it's just, some episodes I can't listen to that yep. long or don't have time, but I know that there's things I need to learn about compression. So I'll bookmark that one and Huff Tuffer or whatever. And things like that. It's great.
Yeah, totally. And then rayortega.com is just basically a portal to send you to all the stuff I do, right? YouTube, Roundtable, you name it. So if you just go to rayortega.com, you can jump off from there to any of the stuff that I have online.
Nice. Cool. And then what was I going to say? Your Patreon thing,
mm-hmm.
which you're promoting a little bit, patreon.com/ray. If you want to join a very exclusive club.
It's very exclusive, including Chris himself.
Yeah,
thank you.
Joining that club. No, sorry, that sounds really bad. Like I was saying, it's minimum. There's not that many people. That's not what I meant. But in terms of,
well, there isn't that many people right now. Patreon, Patreon for me, when I discovered it, when I figured out that there was a thing, Patreon, what it was, I signed up so that I could find out what it is and tell other podcasters about it, because my page doesn't do much. I don't promote it much, but I have it there as a way for me to tell other podcasters, this might work for your community. Cause I think it's really cool. I think it's a really awesome thing that a podcaster can do, because we talked a little bit about making money, and it is really sort of it's a collective of things you're going to do that might make you some money, right? Affiliate links, maybe some type of ad network or something, maybe something like a Patreon. So if you add up these things, you might be able to like cover your hosting costs or something, but it's not typically usually one thing that's going to make you enough money to do anything with podcasting. It's a totality of different things. And Patreon is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it because it's passive. Like, you're not hiding necessarily something behind a paywall. You're giving some bonuses, maybe, depending on how you set it up for your listeners. But you know, people who love your stuff want to see you keep doing it. So that's a way for them to easily contribute. So I do that there. And I created this sort of private Google Plus page. It's so funny because I started it to help out relieve the YouTube comments. I like to answer all my comments, but at some point as the channel grows, it becomes almost impossible to do that. So the Patreon was set up. So like, hey, if you're a patron and you have a question, you can get directly to me, and I'll get that answered right away, as opposed to like 2 weeks down the road when I finally get your comment. So it's a sandbox. It's a playground. I appreciate the support, but it helps me figure out what Patreon is and explain that to other podcasters, so they might do something on it that's really good. I'm sure you're doing pretty good. A couple other podcasters I know, they're doing great. I mean, they're getting like, you know, $300 a month or something. So it's really mm-hmm. cool.
Well, that's what I love. Like, you could do a PayPal thing. You can do, there's many ways to do it. And what's great, we're going way long, but we'll just keep going. What's great with Patreon, I find, is there's the community of folks who support each other is one mm-hmm. aspect. You also, there's discoverability that you wouldn't otherwise get by seeing what someone else supports or who someone else supports. And just the transparency, like you said, that I personally value that transparency of like, this is exactly how many people are giving me right now $107 a month to support me doing this podcasting thing. And so everybody knows that, or hopefully most people recognize that $107 is not going to support my family. I'm not quitting right. my job and doing this full time or any like, and if 5 people leave, well, then it'll drop to, depending on who those are, because they support at different levels, but it'll drop in half, let's say. And so it's by no means this get rich quick scheme or any sort of thing, mm-hmm. but that idea of, I think in 2014, 2015, that ability to support the creative person directly with, in exchange for the goods they're giving you online with money, is a neat thing. And and the goals and all the other stuff, that's the rewards and stuff, is kind of fun. I like some of that stuff and just kind of coming up with unique ways to do that. But that to me is sort of secondary, of just like, I'm going to support this person because I value what they do and I want to see them do it. So,
and most podcasters are not going to have a show that warrants like a sponsor. I mean, you have a sponsor, which is awesome, but that's hard to do. It's hard to get, it's hard to maintain. And a lot of shows, they're just not going to reach the level of numbers, or maybe they don't have a network or something, right? So Patreon is a great way. In fact, it can be far better than a sponsor. People sort of hold out the holy grail of, I got to get a sponsor for my podcast. Patreon is probably a lot better. Guess what? There's no ads in your show. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with ads since we did one earlier.
I'll just edit that out. No.
Yeah, exactly. Just cut that out. But you know what I mean? It's a direct support of the content. And I think, again, it's just another cool additional way to help your show.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've gone well over the hour mark and then some, which is fine. I aim for an hour or so for this show, but sometimes discussions warrant it. So we'll cut it off here. I will mention, you can support me on Patreon. Patreon.com/iChris is where you can check that page out. And we just passed the what are they called? Milestone goal of, like I said, the webcam Logitech C920 webcam. Cool. I think I bought it through Ray's affiliate link, so we'll spread the money.
Oh,
maybe
thank
I didn't.
You.
I don't. See? Don't hold me to that.
Well, that support works. You know, one jump from one support to another. That's awesome. Exactly. Hey, definitely add on the webcam settings if you're on a Mac.
Yeah, I know. That's one thing I need. I was doing some testing with it and need to pick that up because I can definitely see where that.
Yep.
I think I wore a red shirt and it was just like blown out on my red shirt. And I'm iChris on Twitter. Show Me Your Mic has its own Twitter account, Twitter, SMYM_FM. And of course, GoodStuff_FM is where you can follow along with all the other shows that we do at Good Stuff. And we, just as this is the year-end show for Show Me Your Mic, I want to thank you for listening. I really appreciate your support in listening, in sharing the show, leaving a review on iTunes if you have. If you haven't, I'd hardly encourage you to do so. It'll change your life. And just for playing along with this experiment that started way back in episode one with Dave Rupert of talking with other podcasters. I wasn't sure where it would go, if I would even make it past 10 episodes, but here we are at episode 65 and no sign of stopping. There's folks booked into April, not quite that far, into January and February anyways, and which you can do as well. If you're a podcaster and want to come on this show, I would love to chat with you. I've said many times that, you know, at least have 5 episodes or 10 maybe in the can that you've done, and you're a little bit further down the road than just starting out. But I would love to chat all things podcasting. Love hearing about where folks are at and what they're using and different ways of recording podcasts in this medium that we love. So with that said, I guess I'll sign off for now. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Go ahead.
By the way, I did switch mics on you.
Oh, you did?
Quite some time ago, I went back to the ATR. So just some fun.
Oh, nice. There you go.
Show me your mic. Do you know?
Little teaser at the end. That's our. Yes. I should have the serial music start up there just to. Okay. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you in 2015. Bye.